Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, of course, Democrats held their fourth presidential candidate debate last night. That was in Ohio. On stage, Warren, Biden, Klobuchar, O'Rourke, Sanders, Buttigieg, Harris, Booker, Yang, Castro, Gabbard, Steyer. It was the first debate since House Democrats launched a formal impeachment inquiry. And it also comes after one of the leading candidates, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, had a heart attack. Also, a time when the Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is seen increasingly as this field's front runner. In just a moment, we'll get analysis of the debate, along with developments in other areas of politics, on the impeachment inquiry, for instance, from Iowa State University political scientist Jim McCormick. But first, let's check in with IPR's Kate Payne. Kate watched the debate with a group of voters at a bar in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
What an assignment. What bar were you at?
So it was a place called Lucky's on 16th. It was a bar in the Czech Village of Cedar Rapids.
Okay. So, and we could imagine most people interested in this debate were Democrats, perhaps some independents. What was the crowd like?
Yeah, so there are a group of folks there for an event called Drinking Liberally. So a pun for you all. It's, you know, a group of folks, you know, coming together to talk a little about progressive politics and have a drink. And then there were also just, you know, folks in the bar who happened to be there that night, but definitely seemed like mostly Democrats there to watch.
Okay, so do tell us. So share some of the reaction that they shared with you and while you watch them, watch the debate.
Yeah. So it was interesting. You know, this is a group of folks who are very keyed into the politics. There was one of the campaign organizers there as well. There was somebody watching, you know, they had their laptops up and they're monitoring Twitter and they're monitoring, I think it was the 538, you know, sort of live blog as the debate goes on. So they're really keyed into this. And people definitely took note of Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's rising in the polls, has been in the state of Iowa and other early states and across the country. And definitely the debate, the other candidates sort of took a new focus in turning on her with fresh scrutiny to sort of vet some of her leading policies. Can she stand up to that scrutiny and to this new mantle of being a front runner?
Mm-hmm. And you found that you talked with people who were Warren supporters?
Yeah, so I talked with a couple folks who are either leaning pretty hard to Warren or are definitely considering, you know, in their top three, top five or so. And one of the people I spoke with is a couple friends who came in to have dinner, Opara Rice and Travis Jacobs, and they've been watching Warren rise, watching her get that extra scrutiny, and they do like her progressive policies. They like that lean, but Opara Rice was telling me that, you know, he has a couple friends who are longtime, lifelong GOP voters who are watching this as well. And they are, you know, disenchanted with the president and they want to vote for a Democrat. But they're telling Opara, you know, please don't put Warren or Sanders up there. We can't stomach that.
I have two friends who have been lifelong Republicans, and they said to me they've been never Trumpers, and they said they absolutely will not vote for him, and said to me, please, you guys don't mess this up, right? And their thing is they'll vote for whoever we put up, as long as it's not Warren or Bernie Sanders, which is literally what they said. They said, just give me somebody middle of the road; they can live with that.
Okay, so this is interesting because, Kate, as you're identifying here, this is precisely the debate within the Democratic Party, moderate or progressive. Which one is more electable is a key question for many Democrats, right?
It is. And a question they're increasingly asking themselves as Warren is building in this race. And Opara Rice was saying, you know, yes, we should have a party that includes independents, that should win over Republicans as well. And, you know, he's listening to his friends, but, you know, I asked, are you going to listen, you know, all the way to caucus night? And he said, you know, I'm going to follow the news. I'm going to follow how the race moves, and I'm going to support the nominee. And so that won't sway him ultimately, he says, but he hears that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Kate Payne for this segment of our Politics Wednesday, Kate watched the debate last night with a group of voters at a bar in Cedar Rapids, Lucky's on 16th. Who else did you talk with? We've got some other voices to hear.
Yeah, I talked with another person named Linda Bach, and this is actually going to be her first caucus cycle. She moved a couple years ago from the Chicago area, so she's pretty excited to be in the middle of it. And she's one of these people who said she's leaning pretty darn hard towards Elizabeth Warren as well. But she's also has concerns, particularly when it comes to health care, which for Linda, she said, is her number two issue after climate change. And health care, of course, is among the top issues of many voters across the country, you know, really, really important and hitting home. So it's that much more troubling maybe for her that she sees these issues and thinking that Warren is moving too far to the left and on healthcare specifically, and that that could further erode some of this support. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm. I think if anything will be a struggle for her to get past is that one. You know, I think, and the other candidates, Mayor Pete and all that, know that, and they're focusing on that. Biden is focusing on that. And I think that that's going to be the biggest struggle.
So, Kate, you certainly found Warren supporters in that at that bar watching the debate last night, supporters of other candidates as well?
Yeah, maybe the largest contingent of folks who seemed decided, you know, fully decided, were for New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
Really?
Yeah. And so there are a couple of them there and, you know, cheering him along the way, of course. And Booker is one of the candidates who's invested heavily in the state of Iowa from the get-go, investing in staff on the ground. And so you can see that playing out there. And spoke with one person, Scott Phones, who, again, is a dedicated supporter to Cory Booker. But he had some thoughts on Senator Bernie Sanders as well. Scott is a former paramedic. And he said that he was pretty troubled by the senator's heart attack, despite, you know, Senator Sanders saying he's feeling great, you know.
And by all appearances, he seemed great.
Yeah. You know, he says he's ready to wage a vigorous campaign back on the trail. But Scott still has concerns there.
When you're 78 years old, we've got a much bigger problem on our hands. I believe that his heart attack, quite frankly, disqualified him physically from the presidential race any further. And it's unfortunate, but that's just kind of the way it is.
Okay. Kate, of course, that debate last night, starting off with the candidates reacting to the launch of the impeachment inquiry here officially now. This is the first time it's happened. I mean, it happened a few days ago, a couple weeks ago, but this is the first debate that it's been talked about. What was the reaction in the bar you were at among debate watchers?
It seemed pretty mixed. Impeachment, you know, with the folks that I spoke to, it did not seem to be, you know, a heart-wrenching, you know, soul-shaking sort of issue. They seemed pretty even-keeled about it, you know, saying they felt that it had to be addressed, you know, that Democrats should move forward with the inquiry, but that they hoped that it would be handled quickly, gotten out of the way so that they can return to the other issues of the day that they want to see discussed. And they also said that they're concerned about this inquiry really firing up the president and his supporters and that potentially backfiring on Democrats and their hopes in this race.
Mm-hmm. Kate, and before I let you go, I wonder, what can you tell us about how polling of these candidates and issues here in Iowa compares to the national polling we've been hearing reports on? We've seen these shifts, these trends, Warren rising, Biden dropping somewhat, Sanders dropping quite a bit. In terms of issues and candidates, what are we seeing in Iowa?
Yeah, so in September we had the most recent Iowa poll come out, and that is, you know, considered the gold standard in polling. And so we did see those aspects of, you know, Warren really rising and leading in that poll for the first time, Biden and Sanders starting to slip, which is something that we're seeing, you know, elsewhere as well. It does seem that maybe Iowa is, you know, sort of leading a little earlier, perhaps, on that. On Real Clear Politics right now, it seems that Biden is still up in their average. But it was interesting, something that came out of that Iowa poll as well, that may be in conflict to the candidates that we're seeing lead, is Iowa Democrats have an interest in someone who can find common ground with Republicans, as well as somebody who represents a new generation of leadership. So there are other issues, you know, on Iowans' minds as they continue through this campaign, and we'll see how that sort of responds and reflects to the candidates of the day.
Okay, and Kate Payne, we'll look forward to your further reporting. Kate Payne of Iowa Public Radio, Eastern Iowa reporter, but also co-host of Iowa Public Radio's podcast, Caucus Land. Do check that out, by the way. Kate, thanks for stepping into the studio today.
Thanks, Ben.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, continuing with our Politics Wednesday. Let's go to our analyst, Jim McCormick, for the rest of the hour. Jim is a professor of political science at Iowa State University. He's been in our AIM studio for the first part of this hour. Listening in, right, Jim?
Yes, indeed. Yes. Very, very interesting interview. Very well done.
Well, thank you very much. Before we get into your personal analysis of the debate, perhaps I can ask you about what we just heard from Kate Payne talking with Democratic observers, those highly interested in the debate last night, the fourth. What are your thoughts in terms of the reactions from the Democrats at that one Cedar Rapids bar?
What I thought was interesting was the first comment with regard to the kind of concerns that some have about Elizabeth Warren and whether, you know, her positions are moving too far to the left. And, you know, as I watched the debate last night, that was almost the first thing that came up in terms of her commitment to Medicare for all and how it would be paid for. And later on, her wealth tax, you know, she came under attack from particularly seen from Pete Buttigieg and then also from Amy Klobuchar. A little bit later from Andrew Yang. So I thought that was interesting because, you know, there is a concern even among Democrats, activist Democrats, that maybe even as Elizabeth Warren gains the ascendancy here and seems to be leading, you know, across some of the primary and caucus states, that some of those areas that she has are going to be really ripe for attack by not only her Democratic opponents, but certainly by President Trump as well.
Mm-hmm. We want you, our listeners, to join this conversation with Jim McCormick for the rest of the hour. We'll discuss the debate, a good part of the hour devoted, of course, to debate analysis, but also we'll talk about the latest, well, it's a whole flurry of developments in the impeachment inquiry, which was officially launched now a number of days ago. But to the debate, what exchange, listeners to this program, what exchange in last night's debate shaped your view of the candidates? Join our conversation. If you've got a question for Jim as well, has your mind, for instance, been changed in the course of these Democratic debates? This was the fourth one last night. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Looking for your reaction and your questions about the debate last night as we pick it apart with some thoughts. Let's listen to one of the prominent themes last night. In many polls, not in all of them, Senator Elizabeth Warren, a front runner, she was a target of a wide-ranging attacks last night. Here's a brief exchange with former Vice President Joe Biden on taking on the big banks.
The big banks fought us. The Republicans fought us. Some of the Democrats fought us. But we got that agency passed into law.
I agreed with the great job she did. And I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill. I convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
Senator Warren, do you want to respond?
I am deeply grateful to President Obama, who fought so hard to make sure that agency was passed into law. And I am deeply grateful to every single person who fought for it and who helped pass it into law. But understand,
you did a hell of a job of your job.
Thank you.
Wow. Jim McCormick.
that was one of the great lines of the debate here. And I thought, you know, Elizabeth Warren was really on top of her game in terms of responding and really in many ways, of course, putting down Vice President Biden with the failure to really directly thank him for his involvement after his interjection there, that he had helped her gain support on the floor of the Congress here.
Right. Biden calling her health care plans vague, argued that Warren had never accomplished anything big, but also attacks from other Democrats, Buttigieg, implying that Warren didn't trust the American people to decide whether they wanted to remain on private health insurance plans. Klobuchar calling Warren's plans a pipe dream. Let's listen to some of Amy Klobuchar. And before we do, would you agree with the analysis we're seeing around it that Amy Klobuchar had her best night yet?
Oh, I think so. By far. I mean, I think that her and Mayor Pete, of course, I think, to my mind, at least, were the real winners in this debate. Elizabeth Warren, you know, kind of held her own, but she was not clearly as sharp as she has been in some of the earlier debates.
Okay, let's listen to Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, standing out in this debate much more than she has in the past, had a response on how Senator Warren would pay for Medicare for All and her approaches to governing. Let's listen.
At least Bernie's being honest here and saying how he's going to pay for this and that taxes are going to go up. And I'm sorry, Elizabeth, but you have not said that. And I'm tired of hearing whenever I say these things, oh, it's Republican talking points. You are making Republican talking points right now in this room by coming out for a plan that's going to do that. I appreciate Elizabeth's work. But again, the difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done. I want to give a reality check here to Elizabeth, because no one on this stage wants to protect billionaires. Not even the billionaire wants to protect billionaires. We just have different approaches. Your idea is not the only idea.
Okay, Senator Klobuchar, what did she do differently here, Jim?
Well, I think she was really ready for this because, you know, the Medicare for All issue had come up, and this was clearly in the minds of a couple of these candidates that they were going to take on Elizabeth Warren, because it seems to me there's two issues with that Medicare for All, the expense amount and whether taxes would go up for everybody. And of course, Elizabeth Warren has not said what you directly answered that question. And last night, Mayor Pete put it to her, yes or no, and she still, and even one of the moderators did as well. But the other thing is, in terms of this Medicare for All, is there are a lot of union members that have won hard-fought insurance programs, and they're, I think, going to be reluctant to move away from that to this Medicare for All. And I think that's the other area on the Medicare for All issue that Elizabeth Warren and, of course, Bernie Sanders are really vulnerable on.
Okay, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Your reaction to last night's debate, what moment stood out for you? Did it crystallize? Did it shape your search for a candidate if you are a Democrat or an independent who plans to caucus on February 3rd of 2020? 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to our first caller, Karen in Waterloo. Thank you for joining us, Karen. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. My mind was changed last night. I have been watching the debates, and I have been disappointed in the candidate that I chose to, that I really resonated with over a year ago, before she ever, you know, said that she was going to try and get the nomination. And in the last two debates, I've heard entirely too much rhetoric about Trump and very little good, solid answers to questions. I was very impressed by Klobuchar, who I really, frankly, didn't like before, and I was also impressed by Buttigieg. And I would like to see either one of them get the nomination. But yeah, I've changed my mind.
Yeah,
in fact, I emailed the people and told them I wouldn't be caucusing for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, may I ask where your starting point was in terms of a candidate?
My starting point was Kamala Harris, and I really do like her. But if asked how, for instance, this is just one of the circumstances, when asked how she would ensure that the rest of the world restored its faith in the United States, her response was a dissertation about how bad Trump was, and then she ended with, dude's gotta go. I get that she's got her byline and all that, but frankly, I would have preferred an answer to the question. And I think that is what is just kind of driving me away from those people. And Amy Klobuchar had she had it together last night. So did Pete Buttigieg, and I liked everything that they said. So I'm leaning that way now. And I don't want Bernie, and I don't want Biden, and I don't want Warren. Bernie and Biden are too old. Biden can't, you know, complete a sentence without screwing it up.
Okay.
And
No.
And Bernie, love him, but, you know, they've had their time. Let somebody else in.
Okay, Karen, I'm chuckling at your wealth of observations here. Thank you so much. Karen from Waterloo gives Jim a lot to react to. This is interesting, an evolution there. Jim, we remember that first Democratic debate when Kamala Harris really took on the vice president, then clearly the front runner, head-to-head on busing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, she sort of won that debate, and that was supposedly going to kind of rocket her into the top tier, and she's kind of stayed pretty much at about 7 or 8% rating across the country and across the at least the primary and caucus states. And I thought last night it was probably more of the same. In the second debate, she had a takedown from Tulsi Gabbard there, and last night's debate, I just thought that she had very many of her, as the caller said, of her patent lines, but really does not really engage very effectively in the kind of debate that was going on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. We get into sort of the debate analytics. Imagine, you put yourself in the shoes of one of these candidates. It's hard to be sort of self-aware, isn't it, Jim? To be aware of what you are. Perhaps
you're projecting yourself, and the ability to think on your feet in terms of the kind of responses. I think many instances Elizabeth Warren does very well on that. As the caller pointed out, Vice President Biden had a couple times where he could not sort of articulate exactly what he wanted to say. I actually think his best line and his best expression was at the very end of the debate when he talked about trying to bring the country together.
Okay, we'll be back. Jim McCormick, please stay put there in Ames, professor of political science at Iowa State University, our political analyst for the rest of the hour. We want you to join our discussion. What exchange, what moment in last night's debate shaped the view of the candidates for you as Democrats, as independents who plan to caucus on February 3rd? Has your mind been changed in the course of these Democratic debates? 1-866-780-9100. Back with more Politics Wednesday. And Jim McCormick, I'm Ben Kiefer.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University, talking largely about the Democratic debate last night. We want to hear your reaction. Has it shaped your view of these candidates? Are you a Democrat or an independent who is planning on caucusing on February 3rd of next year? How are you evaluating these candidates? Has a candidate won your support, your solid support already? Are you still waiting to be convinced? Have you changed your mind? We heard someone who changed her mind earlier in the hour in regards to the candidate that she is backing. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Ed. Ed joining us from Waterloo. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Shoot.
Well, I would have liked to have seen more of Tom Steyer last night. I think he's, if given the time, he would be electable. and has a fresh take on things doesn't sound like the same old answer when others were asked about it. And I appreciated the commentators or the commentators going after a controversy when they had it, but even those seemed almost canned, the reaction that came back. And I think Steyer would give a fresh approach to things and have a different approach than some of these lifelong politicians.
Ed, thank you very much for your view from Waterloo. Tom Steyer, the first time on this Democratic debate stage. Jim McCormick, the billionaire from California, I believe, and also stands out as the first in of those among on the stage who came out forcefully in favor of impeaching the president way back in, 2017, huh?
That's right, 2017. And he was running ads in Iowa, I think, as early as that as well in terms of impeaching the president. So, you know, that is his big issue, along with climate change. One of the things, of course, that happened last night, you know, they do these sort of minute counts of how many minutes each of the candidates got. I haven't seen the full spreadsheet on that, you know, but you can see that, you know, Warren and Biden and some of these other, and Sanders, were at the top of the heap in terms of the number of minutes. And Steyer was, of course, really very much at the bottom. He had very little time to really make his case, you know, and that's one of the problems of, you know, having all of these 12 candidates here, it seems to me. And, you know, it was interesting, his issue of climate change, which, of course, the Democrats want to embrace, was not really taken up as a separate issue by the moderators, which was kind of puzzling to me. I mean, it was obviously occasionally mentioned, and Bernie Sanders talking about fossil fuels and so on, but as a separate issue in terms of what should be done about it, which would have really, you know, played into Steyer's wheelhouse here in terms of what he wanted to get done, that really didn't come up. So he was disadvantaged not only in the amount of time that he had, but also in terms of his really his central kind of issue here.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones. Jim McCormick of Iowa State University with his analysis. Also, your thoughts, your questions, your analysis as our IPR listeners. Let's go to Jenny. Jenny in Iowa City. Thanks for holding on, Jenny. Quickly, what do you want to get across to us?
I guess I just wanted to say how impressed I was with Cory Booker last night. And mm-hmm. he hasn't been in my – I'm a Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren wonk. I really love those. I love Bernie Sanders and I love Elizabeth Warren, but – I was really, really impressed with Cory Booker, just his whole demeanor and the fact that he seemed to keep bringing sanity back and with clarity. You know, before I felt like he was a little touchy-feely earlier on in the other debates, but this one I felt like he was strong and that he brought everybody back together. I thought he looked really presidential. I thought he did a good job.
So. Well, of course, on the political spectrum, Jenny, you will recognize you're a Warren/Bernie supporter. Booker is a different part of the spectrum. What do you think of that as someone who is looking for someone to support during the caucus?
I thought it was interesting. You know, more what I came out of was this feeling of I'd love to see him as a vice president, maybe to one of them, you know, or something. I really like him,
okay,
but I don't know that I'm ready to throw everything in because I really am. I'm pretty much a dyed-in-the-wool lefty. I really think that
okay.
Bernie and Elizabeth have it, you know.
If you're already forming tickets, president and vice president, you're also a political junkie. Do you have a ticket in mind before we say goodbye?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure yet. I'm still letting. I'm looking for the second.
Okay.
I love those two. So.
That question is a little premature. Thank you, Jenny, for your view from Iowa City. Interesting. A comment on Booker as a candidate, Jim McCormick.
Yeah, one of the things he did last night was at various times, or maybe almost every time that he spoke, he tried to talk about that we can't just, attack Trump. We also got to bring the country together. And that kind of unity theme that came out at the end of the debate when all of the candidates went around and asked who had influenced them and how they had sort of cooperated across party lines or whatever. But Booker from the outset talked about, you know, not only embracing some of the plans of, you know, in terms of Medicare and that sort of thing, but also said that we really got to think about what happens after Trump is out of office, how we reunite the country. That may be one of his strengths, but I'm a little bit skeptical. I know he's got an organization in Iowa, but I'm a little bit skeptical that he's really going to be able to make much hay out of even out of this performance.
Okay, back to our phones. Let's go to Ackley. Marion is there. Marion, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. So my take on the program last night, the debate, was that Buttigieg, who had been my number two in the lineup, fell from that position. And that's because I had gone to a Buttigieg informational event just days earlier where the organizer at that event said that the Medicare for All plan is actually the ultimate goal of the Buttigieg campaign, even though the plan is currently dubbed Medicare for All Who Want It. So to me, the Buttigieg charge that Warren doesn't trust the American people, I think, is disingenuous. Both campaigns want Medicare for All as the goal. Warren simply wants to go directly to that because she understands that it's not unusual for health insurance companies to pull the rug out from under their customers to withdraw coverage in cases where it's been counted upon. So that sort of thing would continue under Buttigieg. It would stop under Warren.
Interesting observation. Marion in Ackley, thank you for calling.
Sure.
Let's hear some more from Pete Buttigieg. Aside from Marion, I think widely seen as a good performance by Pete Buttigieg last night. Let's go to foreign policy. You certainly your wheelhouse, Jim McCormick.
Yeah.
Here's an exchange, heated exchange between Representative Tulsi Gabbard, candidate, representative, U.S. representative from Hawaii, about the situation. As Gabbard pressed Buttigieg on putting an end to what she said is an endless war.
You can put an end to endless war without embracing Donald
Will
Trump's
policy. Will you end the regime change
doing.
War is the question.
What we are doing.
What is an endless war if it's not yet another regime change
please.
War?
Please allow him to respond.
What we are doing, or what we were doing in Syria, was keeping our word. Part of what makes it possible for the United States to get people to put their lives on the line to back us up is the idea that we will back them up too. When I was deployed, not just the Afghan National Army forces, but the janitors put their lives on the line just by working with U.S. forces. I would have a hard time today looking an Afghan civilian or soldier in the eye after what just happened over there. And it is undermining the honor of our soldiers.
Pete Buttigieg and Tulsi Gabbard, the two veterans on the stage. I think those are the only two, right, Jim, that we have in our candidate lineup there. What do you think of that exchange and Pete Buttigieg there?
Well, I think that Mayor Pete, really had the response. I mean, I guess it's a position I probably would very much agree with, actually. I think that the decision to withdraw even that limited amount of forces that the United States had in northeast Syria is really a mistake in terms of the kind of signal that it sent not only to Turkey but to Russia and Iran and so on. And I mean, Tulsi Gabbard's concern, of course, is that we're trying to engage in regime change, and the problem is that the United States has never been very good at regime change. I mean, take Iraq as a primary example of that, but even with regard to Afghanistan, which is becoming unraveling again, so I think that that Mayor Pete probably scored some points there in terms of trying to maintain American credibility around the world.
Okay, let's go to Joe. Joe is calling from Humboldt. We're running out of time a little bit here, Joe. I ask you to be concise, but welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Exactly what you were talking about right now, and thank you for taking my call. And I was wondering, why didn't any of the candidates just say that we need to get back to, if we're going to be in a war, war has to be declared by Congress, because I think that's a bipartisan issue that most of the American people would agree with. And I just want your response to that. Isn't that the way to approach that issue? And, as far as what happened in Syria, that goes back to the Arab Spring, and it's a reality I think we're going to have to deal with a long time. But I just want to keep it concise and ask that question. Thanks.
Right. Joe and Jim.
Certainly that has always been the Congress's position, that they ought to have the right to declare war and when American forces are sent abroad here. Of course, the action in Syria, the action in Iraq, and the action in Afghanistan goes back to the post 9/11 resolution that was passed by the Congress overwhelmingly with really only one dissenting vote, and that's the authorization for the use of military force. And both President Bush, President Obama, and now President Trump has used that as the basis for acting that, in fact, the Congress did give authorization. You know, there was an attempt to override that and to call for actually during the Obama administration to call for a real resolution that would authorize the use of force, and that really did not succeed. But the caller has a very good point. Congress, by the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, makes clear that the right to declare war is a congressional right. And not a presidential authority.
Right, but we do have to point out the last time that was ever done in that way wouldn't have been the Second World War.
Well, there was, you know, the Iraq resolution was finally passed, actually, as well.
Can count that.
Yeah.
Vietnam and Korea were also sort of
military
actions, right?
They were military actions. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution with regard to the Vietnam War was the rationale, and you know, executive officials went up to Congress and said, well, you passed the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. That really gave us, you know, the authority to do whatever we wanted in Southeast Asia because that resolution was written so broadly. And, of course, the Korean War, President Truman said, oh, that's just a little police action. And he pointed to what the United Nations had done in terms of justifying American action there. So you're right. World War II is the first, is the last kind of total declaration of war in a kind of formalized sense.
Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Iowa was mentioned at least once last night when asked about industrial decline in this country. The former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Julian Castro, mentioned job losses at Maytag in Newton, Iowa. Let's listen to that.
I was in Newton, Iowa a few weeks ago, and I visited a place called TPI. Newton, Iowa had a Maytag washing machine manufacturing facility, and then it closed down. TPI manufactures wind turbines. They're putting hundreds of people to work at decent-paying jobs and creating a better future for those families.
Okay, just as a programming note, Julian Castro the secretary scheduled to be on this program in our studio this coming Friday. But, Jim, your comment on his comment and his candidacy.
Well, I think that he's not really scheduled to be in the next debate because he hasn't, you know, measured up in terms of the polling requirements here. You have to have at least 3% in four different Democratic National Committee authorized or approved polls here. So I'm not sure that, you know, unless he gets a spark here, that his candidacy is really heading anywhere. Of course, what his comment there was about you know, basically trying to move in terms of this green job direction. And that is obviously, in the case of Newton, reflective of that. I wonder if I could add, I don't want to take up a lot of time. But
no, it's all yours, Jim.
One of the things that was troubling to me was that there was not really much more foreign policy issues discussed.
Mm.
And the and actually presidents, when they get into office, as I'm sure President Trump has now learned, are you going to, you are faced with foreign policy surprises. For example, there was no mention of China. There was no mention of Hong Kong on the very day in which Carrie Lam was giving the speech, you know, about the kind of troubles in that particular territory. And there was a passing mention to Russia, but really no discussion of the kind of policy. That was kind of disappointing to me. You know, obviously there were a lot of issues discussed over 3 hours, which I was trying to look this morning to see how many viewers there were, because I'm sure there was viewer fatigue after.
You do have to have some staying power.
After 2.5 hours, I looked at my watch and I said, how long is this going to go on here? You know, because then they turned to other issues and so on, but they never got to, you know, I think China's an important issue. I think Hong Kong's an important issue. And I think, you know, dealing with Russia is an important issue. I mean, the closest it came to was to mention Ukraine and, you know, and that sort of thing on the impeachment kind of question at the very beginning. So that's one direction that I would like to see maybe in this next debate, that they have a little higher profile for some foreign policy issues.
Mm-hmm. In this final 5 minutes, I want to do a couple of quick hits on you, Jim, to get out your basic thoughts on some big developments. Let's first go to the impeachment inquiry. So many developments there, I can't list them all. The former Pompeo aide is to discuss his departure during his impeachment testimony. Fiona Hill saying that the U.S. ambassador to the EU was a potentially national a security risk because he was so unprepared for his job. Okay, in a nutshell, where are we going with this impeachment inquiry now that it's been officially declared? But the Speaker Pelosi will not put it to a vote, right?
Right. She yesterday announced again that they were just going to go ahead with the inquiry and going to get, you know, find out the facts and so on. What really is most troubling to me initially looking at this, as we have all these revelations that sort of leaked out of these out of the Intelligence Committee investigation, is how disorganized and how lack of any kind of discipline in terms of the foreign policy decision making process. I mean, there are these, you know, they've come called kind of rogue operations, kind of a separate foreign policy decision making by a small group of individuals here, and the sort of the State Department, at least the traditional State Department officials, have been cut out. I think that is going to be, a focal point. If you go back, even in terms of some of the investigations that were done on President Reagan over the Iran-Contra, one of the things is that when you do not abide by the processes that are put into place, you almost always run into trouble. And this is clearly the case of the process gone awry here. The use of special envoys is not exactly new with President Trump. I mean, President Obama actually had 23 special envoys. But they are at least more connected with the State Department than what we can glean from what's going on here. So I think that they're probably going to aim, I mean, what I have read and sort of intuited is that they're going to probably have a vote here by in November or into December. I think before the Christmas break here, they want to have some kind of a vote on impeachment here. But it'll be interesting once they come out of these closed-door hearings, if they didn't then have these public hearings, and what kind of fireworks we see there. Mm-hmm. The other complicating factor is, if in fact there is this IG report that comes out, you know, we've been promised that for several weeks now, how is that going to play into these kind of impeachment kind of undertaking? Because that raises a different kind of issue about, you know, the kind of investigations that were done of the Trump administration earlier on. So what? We're living in interesting times, and it's going to get more interesting.
In the final minute or so, let's go back to foreign policy. The president, I see, looking at the New York Times this morning, defending his decision to withdraw American troops. It's an order that set a whole bunch of things in motion. Who would have believed that would have happened? You know, put us back 2 weeks and say this is going to happen. And Republicans also saying this is acquiescing to Turkey's incursion against a U.S. ally, the Kurds, right?
Absolutely. I mean, on the one hand, of course, the president is trying to have a campaign promise. But the other campaign promise that he made, what a lot of people have forget about, is that he wanted to get rid of ISIS here. And this is, I'm afraid this is going to be sort of the rebirth of ISIS here. And it certainly is going to be that now the Russians and the Iranians have much more sway in the Middle East. And certainly it reduces our credibility here. No matter what happens with regard to Turkey, I'm not very sanguine that this visit by the vice president and by the secretary of state with Erdogan is going to yield very much in terms of results. So that relationship is also going to be upended, it seems to me here.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been, I think, a real foreign policy blunder, and I suspect that this is going to be a campaign issue on the Democratic side.
Right. Will Turkey remain? It's had its problems in NATO, but will it remain in NATO? This is the largest standing army in NATO.
That's right. And of course, the EU has, I'm not sure how significant this is, that they said they're going to stop selling arms to Turkey, but Turkey will probably just turn to the Russians as they did already on another deal that the Americans didn't like. So that, you know, this is Yeah, this is going to be, I don't know if it's going to come into the situation of who lost Turkey, but it's a possibility.
Okay, Jim McCormick, in these interesting times, it's a pleasure holding your hand and having you hold our hand as we get buffeted back and forth by the news developments that occur every day. Jim, thanks for coming into our studio.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Thanks to all the callers today. Some wonderful input about the debate last night. We appreciate it. Of course, we'll continue that in the 3.5 months or so up into the until the Iowa caucuses. Tomorrow on the program, I'll talk with senior fellows at the Atlantic Council's Global Energy Center about how climate change and energy policy is impacting a number of very important things: military capability, economic competitiveness, international trade, and diplomacy. I'm Ben Kiefer. I hope you'll tune in then.